Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd Canto, Chapter 19, The Killing of the Demon Hiranyaksha, Text 18. Prabhavurvaya vaschandas Chamapam savam aryan Digbyo nipetu gravana Shepanai prahita eva Prabhavurvaya vaschandas Tamapam savam arayan Digbhyo nipetu gravana Shepanai prahita eva Prabhavurvaya vaschandas Tamapam savam arayan Digbhyo nipetu gravana Shepanai prahita eva Savam, caused by dust. Aryan, we're spreading. Digbya, from every direction. Nepetu, came down. Gravana, stones. Shepanai, my machine gun. Prahita, throne. Eva, as if. Fierce winds began to blow from all directions, spreading darkness occasioned by dust and hailstorms. Stones came in volleys from every corner, as if thrown by machine guns. The luminaries in outer space disappeared due to the skies being overcast with masses of clouds, which were accompanied by lightning and thunder. The sky rained pus, hair, blood, stool, urine, and bones. O sinless Vidura, mountains discharge weapons of various kinds, and naked demonesses armed with tridents appear with their hair hanging loose. Cruel and savage slogans were uttered by hosts of ruffian yakshas and rakshasas, who all either marched on foot or rode on horses, elephants, or chariots. The Lord, the personal enjoyer of all sacrifices, now discharged his beloved Sudarshan, which was capable of dispersing the magical forces displayed by the demon. Purport. Even famous yogis and demons can sometimes enact very magical feats by their mystic power. But in the presence of the Sudarshan Chakra, when it is let loose by the Lord, all such magical jugglery is dispersed. The instance of the quarrel between Durvasa Muni and Maharaj Ambarish is a practical example in this matter. Durvasa Muni wanted to display many magical wonders, but when the Sudarshan Chakra appeared, Durvasa himself was afraid and fled to various planets for his personal protection. The Lord is described here as Tripat, which means that he is the enjoyer of three kinds of sacrifices. In Bhagavad Gita, the Lord confirms that he is the beneficiary and enjoyer of all sacrifices, penances, and austerities. The Lord is the enjoyer of three kinds of yajna. As further described in Bhagavad Gita, there are sacrifices of goods, sacrifices of meditation, and sacrifices of philosophical speculation. Those on the paths of Jnana, Yoga, and Karma all have to come in the end to the Supreme Lord, because Vasudeva Sarvamiti, the Supreme Lord, is the ultimate enjoyer of everything. That is the perfection of all sacrifice. Om Jnana Chimidandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivastavi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. There should be a cushion underneath Srila Prabhupada's mercy, otherwise his head is tilted toward the ceiling, as you can see. The seat came with a cushion that goes under the underneath for that purpose. We're in the midst of the great battle between Hiranyaksha and Lord Boar. Sometimes it's hard to understand how Supreme Personality of Godhead likes to fight. Krishna enjoys whatever he does, not simply romancing in the forests of Vrindavan or sporting with the cowboys. Krishna also enjoys killing and fighting. If you look at the movies that people like, you'll see that what is there in the part and parcel exists perfectly and unlimitedly in the source of everything. Little tiny entities, conditioned souls, like either action movies or romance movies. Most ladies like romance movies, and most men like the action movies. Although I was on the airplane from Melbourne to Auckland, I sat next to a man actually liked romance movies. He was telling me his life story. He was a corporate executive director, architectural director. He had just been working on doing a metro system in Delhi in India, and he was coming to New Zealand, to Auckland, to supervise a big sewer system in Auckland. So he was very successful materially, but his heart was hurting. Like most people today, he had married and thought that would be the everything, and then the marriage broke up. He just didn't like her anymore, and she was becoming interested in someone else, and she told him before anything happened. And she said to him, he was telling me, all you have to do is say you love me, and then everything will be fine. But he couldn't bring himself to do it. That was the end of the marriage. He couldn't say the mantra. And therefore everything fell apart. It was interesting. He told him, all he had to do, just say you love me, and then everything will be fine. We'll live happily ever after. But he just couldn't say it. So. That was the end of that. And then he, after 35 years, he's like close to 50, he met his childhood sweetheart, the teen girl of his dreams, who lived across the street from him when he was young, the one he could never attain, but as a 13-year-old was always dreaming of. So they met 35 years later. And then, finally, he attained his teenage dream. They married. So I said, all right, now are you happy? No. I don't think this is it. I said, what are you going to do now? Are you going to divorce this one too? I just don't know, but it's just not it. So I said, well, what's the problem? come from very romantic parents. They were, even in their late old age, they were always hugging and romancing. And she comes from very cold parents, and she just doesn't give me that reciprocation I crave for. I just crave for romance day and night, and it's going on and on like that. She just doesn't make my heart melt. Then he told me about his parents. He said, you know, my parents, when they were, my father was 84, and my mother was 80, she was 82, and once I walked into their room, and I said, wow, this is incredible, this is wonderful. At such an age, they're still having romance. I don't know, disgusting. 84 and 82? But he was just, oh, he was trembling with ecstasy when he happened to walk in their room, you know, and caught them at this moment. He said, wow, this is incredible. This is what life's about. This is the real thing. Pure love, even into the elderly years of the 80s, they're still romantic. Wow, that's what I want. So he's, you know, he's unsatisfied with his wife because, you know, she doesn't give him that constant slurp. So, he was asking me what to do. I said, you could call your wife when you get to Auckland, when you get to your hotel, and tell her you sat next to a Hare Krishna, and he told you that she's right. I said, what? Yeah, she's right, you know. All this slurpy stuff that you crave is just fantasy in your mind. All right, I'm going to do that as soon as I get to the hotel. I'm going to call up my wife and tell her, guess what, I sat next to a Hare Krishna. And he said, you were right. I didn't, of course, tell him my disgust at hearing about the activities of his parents in the, you know, their 80s, you know, carrying on like a bunch of crazy teenagers. But he thought this was like the pinnacle of human existence, to be a man of 84 and a woman of 82 and still engaged in these bodily connections. He thought, wow, this is it. This is the nectar. This is, wow. I was so impressed. I was so proud of my parents. Now, this is the standard of so-called human life today. People have nothing else to aspire for. So their hope is that somehow or other, the passion will keep going. Somehow or other. So anyway, he told me he likes romance movies. I actually said it to him. I know, you're one of those guys who likes romance movies, right? Most men, they go for the action movies, you know, Terminator 3, lots of killing, you know, and violence in all sorts of exotic ways. And generally the ladies like the slurpy romance movies, the heartthrob type of movies. But no, he liked the heartthrob. In any case, all this is there in the tiny living entity, the conditioned soul, because it exists perfectly in Krishna. What is so difficult to understand? In Krishna is the perfection of romance. In the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the perfection of action, violence, killing. It's all there in the Supreme. Otherwise, how can it be in the emanations, the living entities, and the material world? As the first verse of the Bhagavatam says, Janmadayasyata, the absolute truth is that from which everything emanates. Everything means everything. So if you're looking for the origin of horror, of romance, of action, of killing, it's all there in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but it is there perfectly, without flaw, without one touch, the slightest touch of the material energy. Once you can assimilate this point, then you can properly understand Krishna's pastimes. Otherwise, Krishna is achincha. He's inconceivable. Don't scratch your head and wonder why people cannot understand Krishna. It is because they have not performed devotional service. The Lord himself says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhakja Mama Bijanati, only by devotional service can I be understood. That's the way it is. You cannot theoretically understand Krishna. Krishna is known only by the devotees. This is why he tells Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, Bhakto Sime Sakha Cheti Rahasyam Hetarutamam. Arjuna, because you are my bhakta, you're my devotee, and you're my sakha, you're my friend, therefore you can understand this great mystery of Bhagavad Gita. So it's subjective. According to your subjectivity, according to your type of consciousness, you'll be able to understand or not the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What is the difficulty? Just like in order to understand anyone, you have to have some friendly relationship with them. Without acting in a friendly way, or without rendering some service, how do you get to understand someone? Let's just take Rodrigo, for example. You were traveling and you met. Yes. And so it's not that immediately you understood her, right? It's not that immediately you understood her. You just were intrigued, right? And then you had to go through various activities and rituals in order to gain an understanding of her, right? You had to, you know, perform some service. And in that way, when she felt, you know, motivated, she revealed more of herself to you, right? So, what is the big deal about understanding that if we want to understand God, we must perform activities to please the Supreme Lord? Otherwise, it's not possible to understand. Just like since your relationship has started, you come to know things about her that you didn't realize were there, right? So similarly, in the relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you come to understand things you didn't know before or weren't aware of before. What is the difficulty? It's amazing how conditioned souls want to deny God having the very things that conditioned souls hold so important. God can't have romance. Well, you have romance. Yeah, well, that's different. God can't fight. But you may not fight yourself, but you like to watch fights. Rugby is nothing but a big fight, right? You like to watch that. At least the men, the ladies pretend to like it. Right? So, why do you deny the supreme source of everything the very things that you relish so much? This is envy. God can't do this. God can't do that. He's just some kind of energy blob. He's just some kind of, you know, as we discussed last night, we gave people the various alternatives they had in their mind about what is God. There was the whatever category, you know, the whatever. Whatever means big deal. Something may be there, but it's not so important for me. More important is my own sense gratification. But I do acknowledge it could be something, whatever, you know. Just like if someone asks you, should I do this or that? And you say, whatever. It means you just don't care so much. It's not that important to you. So we have the whatever category. Yeah, there's something up there. There's something all around. There's something supreme, but whatever. And then there was the category of the great unknown, the mystery category. It's just a mystery. No point in even trying to understand it. It's just a mystery. You know, just accept that there's the mystery and go on with your sense gratification. At the mystery school, just understand it's a mystery. You're supposed to be like, ooh, the mystery of it all, the great unknown. And then there's the who knows category. Who really knows anyway? Is it possible for anyone to know? So, in other words, don't even think about it because who knows? You can imagine people sitting around, you know, smoking some marijuana, and then,
Who knows? Who can know? Hey, pass another one. Yeah, who can know? No one knows.
Maybe some of you even indulge in such discussions. Pipe talk. I've described the two types of foolish conversations in this world. They fall into the category of either pillow talk or pipe talk. How many of you have indulged in both? When the male and female heads are upon the same pillow, they speak so much nonsense. Pretending to be for real. And then there's, of course, the pipe talk. And you're passing the hashish pipe. You know, you say so many things. Yeah, it's like just a great mystery. Yeah. Who can know? Yeah, who really knows? Yeah. Yeah. It seems very, you know, important what you're saying. So, that was the category, who knows? And then the final category was, who cares anyway? We actually had one guest who was in that category. Who cares? Why are you taking all these things so seriously? Who cares? When you're alive, you're alive. When you're dead, you're dead. Just get it while you can. Do the best you know you can at the moment. Who cares about this spiritual stuff? God, the soul, the afterlife. Who cares? So she felt quite liberated in that way. Who cares? It's like some intoxicated person walking around, say, on Manners Mall and just doing whatever he or she likes. And, you know, who cares their police? Who cares their laws? Who cares? Just do whatever you like. So those were the categories that we presented to them. The whatever category, the great mystery, the great unknown category, the who knows category, and the who cares category. Because of envy, we just refuse to think that God has whatever we have and infinitely more. That there can be romance in the Supreme Lord, violence in the Supreme Lord, horror in the Supreme Lord. How can that be? Well, how can it be that you have it in your tiny little lives, in this tiny little world? First, understand the definition of God. That's given in the Bhagavatam, Janmadhyaya Siddhaha. That's what it says, that's what it means. The absolute truth is that from which everything emanates. How can the emanation have something if the source doesn't have it? Everything has to be there in the source. So this is also the challenge to impersonalists. How can you deny personality and individuality in the supreme source of everything when you see it in this temporary world? How can something be in the shadow that's not there in the source of the shadow? How can something be in the reflection that's not there in the actual reality that's making the reflection, the source of the reflection? So this is proper Vedanta, the end of all Vedic knowledge, understanding these things. Srimad Bhagavatam is Srila Vyasadeva's natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. If you want to understand a book, the best way is to have the author who wrote the book explain it to you. So that's what Srila Vyasadeva has done in Srimad Bhagavatam. He's explaining Vedanta Sutra to you. If you try to read Vedanta Sutra on your own, you'll not understand. It's not meant for people in Kali Yuga. And even in previous ages, Vedanta Sutra required quite some spiritual discipline to understand. So, you have Vyasadeva's natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra, the end of all knowledge. That is Srimad Bhagavatam, which explicitly describes the glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that someone in Kali Yuga who tries to read Vedanta Sutra will just end up being an atheist because they can't they don't have sufficient brain substance to understand that the personality of Godhead is there in Vedanta Sutra. We're seeing the Lord in his incarnation as Lord Bor, Varaha. We're seeing him enjoying the fight. It's a terrible scene otherwise. The universe is becoming so affected by Hiranyaksha's mystic power. We've heard these verses, how by Hiranyaksha's mystic power he caused the universe to look like it's about to be destroyed. And all sorts of horrible things are appearing everywhere on a universal cosmic scale. This is just the power of Hiranyaksha. He has mystic power. We read that one of the things he created was naked demonesses armed with tridents appearing with their hair hanging loose. Well, that's an everyday sight these days. Well, yeah, just give them tridents and you'll have the complete picture there. Just go to Manor Mall or Cuba Mall, that's what you'll see, you know, practically speaking. I was walking around, we just pass out tridents, you know. So, Hiranyaksha was so powerful, he could create these huge cosmic scenes by mystic power. What is the problem in understanding that? But people today are so tiny in their conceptions that they are impressed if someone can bend a spoon with their mind. Wow, that's really incredible. You bent a spoon with your mind. What's the big deal? I wonder if any of you, when you're really concentrating on something on the computer, can affect the computer. Have you ever done that? Anyone done that? It happens to me all the time. If I'm really concentrating on something, the screen changes. Well, it's a big deal. It's just the power of a certain energy. No big deal. So, Hiranyaksha's got his material powers. He can, with his mystic powers, he conjures up all these frightening scenes, which would terrify an ordinary person. But for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, it's all good fun. The Lord enjoys cutting through this illusion. And he does it with his Sudarshan chakra. As we read, the Lord, the personal enjoyer of all sacrifices, now discharged his beloved Sudarshan, which was capable of dispersing the magical forces displayed by the demon. So the illumination of the Sudarshan chakra dissipated the illusions created by Hiranyaksha, just like when the sun rises, the fog goes away. Similarly, when we chant the holy name of Krishna, by the influence of the holy name, all the illusion and fog in our life becomes dissipated. That's why we're so eager for people to start chanting. Like Gokulila, she brought one young man last night who came from Wanganui. She met him there. So he asked, what to do next? I told him, you start chanting. You're already reading. Now combine the chanting with the reading, and then you will get the spiritual experience. That is a fact. When the holy name of Krishna rises, then the illusions fade. In other words, what you thought was so important reveals itself to be quite inferior and a waste of time. When you properly take shelter of the holy name, then you can see. You can see the illusions around you. Just like when the Sudarshan chakra is released by the Lord, it illuminates everywhere. You can see. And also all the inauspicious, all the unwanted things are dissipated, chased away. This statement is there in the sixth canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Kechik Kevalaya Bhukta Vasudeva Parayana. by exclusive devotional service to Lord Vasudev, Lord Krishna. All the contamination of material life is destroyed. Just like when the sun rises, all the fog is dissipated. This is one reason why we're constantly trying to refine our devotional service and make it simply for Krishna's pleasure. So that, first of all the fog of inauspiciousness will dissipate. And secondly, and more importantly, so our love for Krishna will increase, our attraction for Krishna. How do you know your love, your attraction for Krishna is developing? When you become attracted to devotional service. When you don't do devotional service anymore with a grudging manner. Oh, I have to do this. Okay, right. When you spontaneously become eager to serve Krishna, to glorify Krishna, that is the sign that your health, is spiritual health, is coming back. You judge by the slackening of the grip of lust, anger, and greed, and the increase in attachment for Krishna's service, attraction to serving Krishna and glorifying Krishna, then you know your spiritual health is returning. You're getting closer to your original constitutional position. Therefore, we take great care to let the holy name of Krishna arise in our life. And don't become bothered by hopelessness. Oh, it seems impossible that I'll ever chant nicely. It is a process that requires daily practice. In your life, you may notice various phases in which sometimes you're going to feel really alive with attraction for Krishna's service, Krishna's name, Krishna's pastimes. And other times you may feel a little dry. Don't be discouraged when you feel a little dry. Recognize those times in your life as a chance for increasing your attachment for the Lord by immersing yourself deeper in His glories. The so-called dry patches are incentives how to go deeper. And you're always going to feel that I'm not attracted to Krishna enough. That's just the way bhakti is. This is the way emotions are on the spiritual platform. You always think there's so much more Krishna. When will I ever get to the bottom of this? You'll never get to the bottom of Krishna. So bhakti yoga is a process of unlimitedly falling in love with Krishna. Isn't that the experience that conditioned souls crave? They want to unlimitedly fall in love within the kingdom of Maya. Not possible. I was telling the people last night, every teenager remembers the first time you became attracted to someone and fell into a relationship with that person. Teenagers take this so seriously. Everyone in the room admitted, yes, yes, when we were teenagers, we took it so seriously. We were sure the adults didn't understand. Maybe you all remember your teenage affairs. It was very serious. It's real. The adults just didn't understand. This is the real thing. But then as soon as you became 20 years old, you look back at your teenage years and said, oh, that was crazy. Still, as an adult, the conditioned soul still crave this experience of falling into love, and it just doesn't end. And just like this man I was talking about, he hasn't got beyond his teenage years. He's still craving eternal romance, just the eternal passionate affair. So the problem is, people are looking for that experience within the material energy. Yes, you can eternally fall in love. That is what the process of bhakti yoga is all about. Eternally falling in love with the supreme lovable person. What you like in a material relationship is that you continuously get to know that person, and there's deeper and deeper things you find out about them. You go deeper and deeper into their qualities and activities, and your appreciation increases day by day. That's the hope, which is not fulfilled. But in Bhakti Yoga, it is fulfilled. Try to understand the direction your whole life is going into. Your whole life is going into the direction of unlimitedly falling in love with Krishna. The more you find out about Krishna, the more you hunger to find out more. The more you hear the holy name, the more you want to hear the holy name. The more you serve Krishna, the more you want to serve Krishna. The more you sacrifice for Krishna, the more you want to sacrifice. It just goes, it goes on and on and on and on. And you wonder, will I ever get to the bottom of this ocean? No, you won't get to the bottom of the ocean of Premarnava, the ocean of love of Krishna. You will not get to the bottom. You're always going to feel that you're just standing on the shore because there's unlimited depths. So this is what Bhakti Yoga is all about. Even through the so-called dry patches, which sometimes Krishna uses to stimulate you onward, and these dry patches are sometimes your own creation due to inattentiveness in chanting and hearing the glories of the Lord. In both cases, when you feel this dryness, push ahead with even greater determination, and you'll see Krishna is there reciprocating with you. Well, this is the nature of the path of bhakti, bhakti marg, the path of devotional service to the Supreme Lord. We want to understand Krishna. Everyone, as I've pointed out so many times, wants to feel understood. If you feel understood amongst your fellow devotees, then you're content. But if you feel the devotees, they don't understand, then you feel uncomfortable. They don't understand. No one around me understands me. Then you feel out of place. Why is it that we want to be understood, but we don't care whether Krishna is understood? Whether you understand Krishna or not, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and he's eternally active. It's not that Krishna is sitting around inactive waiting for you to understand him. No, he's always doing things. He has unlimited activities. You can't even describe, for example, just one day's activities of Lord Chaitanya. We should not be bewildered that the greatest scholars cannot understand Krishna. The Lord himself says this in Bhagavad Gita. Name vidu suragana prabhavam na maharshaya aham adhir hi devanam maharshinam chasarvasa. Krishna says, the greatest rishis in the cosmos, the greatest demigods, they don't understand me. One reason is that in every case, I am the source of these sages and demigods. I was here before them. I was here before they existed. So, therefore, they don't understand anything that's prior to their existence. So, if the greatest rishis and devas cannot understand Krishna, why do you expect that your local university professor is supposed to understand Krishna? Just because they wave a PhD in front of you. Oh, we know all about Krishna. He was some native boy in India who people wrote folk tales about. He's the Hindu love god. Why do you expect such puny Kali Yuga wretches to be able to understand Krishna when the great when Brahma, Shiva, the greatest demigods say, we do not understand Krishna? But if you render service to Krishna, you can understand him. That is the nature of devotional service. It brings understanding of Krishna. Then you'll understand why the Lord fights, why he relishes battling with Hiranyaksha. Even to the point of Hiranyaksha knocks the club out of the Lord's hand. Does that mean the Lord is fallible? No, it just means he's having fun. Let Hiranyaksha think that he's making some headway. I'll drop my club because he hit me. And then, here in Yaksha, as you heard, he shows that, actually, I'm a bit of a man of Dharma. Since you dropped your club, I won't attack you now. I'm fair. I follow the rules. I know what religion is. How can you know what Dharma is? How can you know what religion is when you're fighting against the Supreme Personality of Godhead? So Lord Varaha became angry. Like, what is this mockery? Like, he thinks he's being religious, being fair. So then Lord Varaha began to fight back. At that point, the fight became so ferocious that Hiranyaksha realized the end is coming, and so as his last resort, he relied on mystic power. But that mystic power is being cut to pieces, dissipated like the fog when the sun rises by the Sudarshan Chakra of the Lord. We need to be able to convey to people the reality of Krishna. This is what's missing. They're so foggy and vague these days. Everything is spiritual in its own way, and no one accepts that there's any ultimate authority. This is the problem. Sooner or later, your preaching has to come around to this point. What is the ultimate authority in existence? They don't accept any ultimate authority. It's simply, how do I feel? I think this feels good, so it must be right. I was speaking to some devotees yesterday how I got one letter from a wayward disciple, and she was saying how she was living with one lapsed devotee, and they weren't marrying right away because the astrology said better to marry sometime next year, so they're waiting. So I wrote, I said, oh, fine, I'm going to wait for your marriage, but why do you wait to live together? Why don't you wait to live together? And she wrote back, oh, I expected this heavy reaction from you. I know it's non-Vedic what I'm doing. I know it's not Prabhupada's way, but I feel that sometimes that way is not good for the individual. Right now I'm feeling so loving. Never before. I'm feeling so spontaneous in my bhakti like never before. All around me is love. I feel love from you, love from him, love from all the devotees. I just feel Krishna everywhere. Just really got into a tizzy, you know. So, this is the new agey influence. The authority is your feelings at the present moment. Consult your feelings at the present moment, and then you know the ultimate reality. No question of Dharma. Of course, I'm not going to write back and say anything because if someone doesn't want instruction, what's the use? But why is it simply the Vedic way or Srila Prabhupada's way, any of the world's religious traditions condemn random male-female association without bonds of commitment? It's not an esoteric point like the Rasa Lila or something. It's like sometimes when, here in New Zealand, when, you know, his boyfriend and girlfriend, partners, as it's called these days, you know. Does that make it sound more elevated? Partners. Really, that adds, what kind of air does that add to it? Partners. They say that in Sweden now, too? Partners. It's all over the world now, huh? Before, it was just boyfriend and girlfriend. Someone would say, this is my boyfriend, this is my girlfriend. But now you say, this is my partner. They do that in Sweden, too? What does that add to the whole situation? More official, more acceptable. It means, when you say, this is my partner, it means you plan on being together for a couple of months, right? At least, right? If a boyfriend or girlfriend could be just for a weekend, is that it? But people have really become accustomed to it. I remember I made a mistake. I was at a travel agency in Auckland, and another male devotee was traveling with me. So I said to the travel agent, "Well, yeah, make a reservation for my partner too." Yeah, his name is. She kind of looked at me like. Of course, you know, being a big Kiwi, she didn't make any judgment. I mean, it's all, you know, these days, you know, it's, you know. But she's going. She kind of looked and then, anyway. Yeah. Whatever. So, you know, but it used to be a man could say that, you know, this is my partner, and people would understand. It's your business partner or your, you know. You're a partner in some kind of endeavor. You can't say that now anyway, can you? People just look at you like... So that's what it's called now, the partners, and that's supposed to add some, you know, legitimacy to it. So anyway, call it partners, call it boyfriend, girlfriend, it's just all the same thing. Unregulated interaction between the opposite sex destroys any chance for spiritual development. Simply the bodily conception of life increases. That's all that happens. And the ultimate authority becomes your own feelings. Well, this must be good because I'm feeling so nice now. This must be what Krishna wants because I'm feeling so loving. Love is all around me. I'm feeling spontaneous about my bhakti. I'm not shackled anymore by these rules and regulations that make you stiff. Right? Yeah, is that it? Make you stiff, rigid, rising at the same time in the morning. Why not just wake up naturally? Why be oppressed by alarm clocks? Just be spontaneous. Wake up naturally, and then it's more psychologically beneficial. Why be enslaved by an alarm clock forcing you to get up at a certain time? You know, the problem with devotees is they have to do so many things. You have to do this, you have to do that, especially in the ashrams. There's always someone to tell you what to do. When will that day come when we'll really be spiritual and just no one will tell us what to do? We just float in spontaneous love. So this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes your feelings. Whatever my feelings are, that is Dharma. And it seems so right. What could be more, there's nothing more natural than this. I'm feeling good. So therefore, it must be the ultimate reality. You ever see little kids playing in the middle of the street when there's traffic? Parents are freaked out. Get out of the middle of the street. The kids, playing. You ever seen something like that? Little kids are playing and the parents, what are you doing? Like maybe they're at the edge of a lake or something like that and the parents just freak out completely. Never happened to any of you? What did you do? What was the situation? Do you remember? Anyone? Yeah. You're on the tracks, playing, having a good time with yourself and some friends. And a train was coming? What were you doing out there? Your father came after you? So you thought you were just playing, having a good time, huh? And there's a train coming on the track. Yeah. But you were just oblivious. You were being spontaneous, just playing, having a good time. Any others? Okay. Yes? Mm-hmm. You thought it was all good fun, huh? Take a nail and, you know, put it into the cord. You thought it was all great fun. Anyone else? Ladies? Who was?
I was
working? She thought she was having a good time.
Yes, she was at first. And then she still had Hollis and
Charlie. Yes, so many examples like that. You think it's a good time, and it turns out to be a disaster. So, like little children in this world, we don't understand the overall system. We think, oh, I'm in love. I'm feeling so good. This is the Dharma. We don't understand them. They are higher principles at work. That's why we have our codes of behavior. That's why we have our standards to protect you so that you can have real bliss, not the bodily, mental, temporary bliss which comes and goes like a disease. Better to develop your natural attraction for Krishna. All right, any questions? Yes.
I don't really understand why Krishna is all attractive in the reservoir of contemplation.
Is what? Because you have independence. Why should Krishna have forced love? I've explained this so many times. Do you want Sophie to be forced to like you?
No.
What do you want? Yeah, you want to feel that she's chosen you.
Yeah.
Right? She's recognized your extraordinary qualities and she's attracted. Then you feel good, yes? But to find out that she's with you just because she's forced to be with you, that's not very nice, is it? Suppose she told you today, she confessed to you, Rodrigo, the only reason why I'm with you is because I wanted someone to travel with, and you were the first person I found. How would you feel? Yes. I couldn't find anyone else to go traveling with. I didn't want to go traveling alone to far off parts of the world. So you came along and I thought, well, he'll do. Would you be enlivened? You'd be heartbroken, right? You would feel used, abused. What would you say then if she said such a thing to you? Huh? You would just go away, huh? Feeling smashed, huh? So, if you don't want that kind of affection, why should Krishna have it? You want voluntary love, right? So does Krishna. So he gives you independence, so you can choose him. Independence, though, means you can misuse it. When you misuse your independence, you're in the material world. Actually, you can never get away from Krishna. Separation from Krishna is impossible at any time. But the curtain of Maya makes it seem that Krishna is not here. Krishna is here, but the curtain of Maya prevents you from seeing that. So actually, you never get away from Krishna. It's impossible. Lord Brahma explains in the second canto of Bhagavatam that even when you think there's no Krishna, that's also Krishna. That's Maya, when you think there's no Krishna. But Maya is also Krishna's energy. So you can never get away from Krishna. So in that way, there's actually no separation. You're just dreaming that there's no Krishna because of your misuse of independence. So bhakti yoga means to use your independence properly. If you want to understand Krishna, then you take up the steps necessary to understand Krishna. What was the process for understanding Sophie? Or trying to understand? Huh? What service did you do? Giving what? How do you give a little bit of you? Cut off some flesh and say, yeah. Oh, what did you do? What sacrifices did you do for her? A lot? Otherwise, she says, get out of here. So you sacrificed your interests for her interests. The common interest. What is the common interest? So you had to sacrifice. You wanted to do something, she didn't want to do it, so you accepted her way. That's a sacrifice. Otherwise, by yourself, you would just do whatever you wanted to do, right? So similarly, we have to sacrifice for Krishna. Let us find what is the best thing to do for Krishna. We're not looking for the common cause in our relationship with Krishna. We're looking for Krishna's cause, Krishna's pleasure. That's the difference. We don't make deals with Krishna. All right, let's find middle ground here. No, we want to discover what is Krishna's pleasure in every situation and just do that. Just like in the forest of Vrindavan, when Krishna plays his flute, all the gopis just leave everything, drop it immediately, and run out to the forest. Who can resist Krishna? Nothing is as important as Krishna's pleasure. They're feeding babies, some of them. They're taking care of their husbands, they're cooking, whatever. They just drop it all and immediately run to the forest because nothing takes precedence over Krishna's pleasure. But then Krishna sees, my devotees are serving me so nicely. I want to serve my devotees. So in that way, there's competition between the Lord and the devotee who can serve each other the best. Then the devotee thinks, what is Krishna doing serving me? Oh no, I have to do more service for Krishna. This way it goes on and on and on. That is the spiritual world. So just like there's a process to understand a tiny person, like Sophie, similarly there's a process to understand the Supreme Person. That process is bhakti yoga. Now, if you put a big burden on Sophie's shoulders, that you are going to satisfy me, you are going to fulfill my every hope and aspiration, is she able to carry that kind of burden? Of course not. She's just a tiny living entity. Very quickly, people find that out. The other person cannot be the Supreme Personality of Godhead for me. But Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and you can put that burden on Krishna. Yes, Krishna can fulfill you unlimitedly. But just like Dhruva Maharaj in the fourth canto of Bhagavatam, he had desires when he took up his service to Krishna. He wanted revenge against his stepmother. He wanted to put his brother in his place. And he wanted a kingdom greater than anyone in his family. With those motives, he worshipped Krishna. But when he saw the Supreme Lord, he realized, what a fool am I. Then he just wanted the association of pure devotees. Still, Krishna fulfilled his desires. Krishna gave him a bigger kingdom than anyone, even Lord Brahma, who was his grandfather. His stepmother met her fate. She died in a forest fire while searching for her son, Dhruva's brother, who was killed while hunting in the forest. All those things happened. But when Dhruva saw the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he realized his great mistake. I'm worshipping, serving that person who can stop the cycle of birth and death. Why? For the purpose of asking for things that will perpetuate the process of repeated birth and death. What a fool am I. Then he understood, I just want pure devotion to the Supreme Lord. Bhakti yoga means serving Krishna for Krishna's pleasure. We want to discover the senses of the Lord and please them. So just remember these examples about when you were little and you did something you thought was so pleasurable, but someone with higher vision could see this is danger. Anyone else had such an experience? Is that Seely? Do you ever do such a thing? Huh? You thought it was great fun, huh? Look at this river. You just jumped in, huh? Spontaneous, huh? And what did your father do? And what did he tell you when he got you out? What did you say? Oh. So you were feeling the spontaneous ecstasy, right? You jumped in there. Ah, what a... You didn't understand the danger, right? That reminds me, I'm having a bit of a battle with your sister. What did she tell you? I told her, I imparted to her very secret, confidential, mysterious, esoteric knowledge that young girls shouldn't be shacking up with young boys. So later she wrote me back a letter saying, I should tell you that I thought about it a bit and I was a little bit disturbed that, you know, you were implying that I was cheap for sleeping with my boyfriend. So I wrote back to her, I said, this is nothing very, very profound to say, to, you know, this reality. It's not very mysterious, it's just common sense. And so I told her, in the future, you'll understand. But for now, she's in that phase, you know, just like she sees the rivers, oh, water, jumps in. But we're going to Great Barrier Island to live together. Sounds like a young Kiwi's dream, right? Go to Great Barrier Island with your partner and live together. Did that? Go to Great Barrier Island and have a teammate. Huh? Doesn't it sound like the perfect Kiwi dream? You're 20 years old and with your boyfriend or girlfriend together, you go to Great Barrier Island, get away from it all and just get into each other. So she told you, I got on her case, huh? She still didn't understand, huh? Huh? Well, she probably understands what she doesn't want to understand. older. He said, ladies should always be very exquisite, like rare jewelry. If you walk into a high-class jewelry shop, there's certain things that are on display, you know, in cases, you know, windows, cases. But that's not the best of the jewels. For the best jewels, the shopkeeper goes in the back and comes out with the best things for special customers. So I told her, a real lady is like that. She's never on display. She's not on the shelf in the supermarket. Take me, here I am. I'm on sale. Bargain price this weekend. $25 off. I know the proper lady is very exquisite, like a rare diamond, that the jewelry shopkeeper has to go in the back to get. I don't usually show this to people, but because you're qualified, I'll show you this, the rare gems. That's what I told her. I didn't just say, you're cheap. But she thought about it and then, you know, came to the conclusion. Why are you saying that I'm cheap just because I'm, you know? She told you that? What did you say to her? Huh? Anyway, you don't do that, please. Celia's a very special teenage girl. How old are you now? 14. You're still chanting Hare Krishna? Very good. Keep it like that. All right, any other questions? Yes. We're a devotee. If Krishna wants a devotee to be sick, we'll be sick. If he wants us to die in time, he will die untimely. What are you going to do? Hold these restrictions up to Krishna? It says in such and such obscure shastra that by worshipping Srila, you get free from all disease. Okay. I'm ready. Now, those devotees who are exclusively dependent on Krishna, just take whatever Krishna gives us as the best. Those kind of inducements are just meant to motivate persons with certain kind of desires to take advantage of the Lord's presence. It's like Narada Muni told Dhruva Maharaj, okay, you want all these things? Worship Vishnu. So throughout various assorted Vedic literatures are always these kind of statements meant to motivate certain kinds of people. But we're trying to be exclusively dependent on Krishna. Whatever Krishna wants, when Krishna wants it, how Krishna wants it. Looking back now, I can see I became sick when I was 25. Until basically I was like 45. Now, of course, I didn't like it at the time, but now I see. It's really good for reducing your enjoying spirit. You've noticed that? Yeah, it just really takes all the, you know, possible so-called pleasure out of the world when you're sick. You can't even digest properly. You're weak. You just don't feel like having material desires then. So it is. A devotee always sees how Krishna is giving me the best thing I need for remembering him. So you worship the Shalagram Srila just to worship Krishna, that's all. And you'll become free from the disease of repeated birth and death. That's the real disease. Bhava Roga. the disease of bhava, becoming and unbecoming. You'll become free from that. Anything else? Yes? By taking the order of the spiritual masters, your life and soul. That's what Prabhupada describes in the purport. Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Kodiyayakya Anakariyamayas. Don't want anything else. My desire is simply to take the words from his mouth for life and soul. Those words actually are not the words of the guru. They're coming through disciplic succession. Therefore, they have potency. So now we're in the Christmas marathon, and it's very nice to hear that so many of you are going out distributing books. While we were away on the Kapiti coast, Krishnaloka and Kadiravan, they also went out every day. One young devotee in Auckland, at the Auckland Ladies Ashram, she told me she had a dream of Srila Prabhupada a week or two ago, and she was in his rooms at the Radhadamodar temple where Prabhupada would stay before he came to the USA. So she walked into those rooms in Vrindavan and expecting to see Prabhupada's murti, and instead she actually saw Prabhupada. And so she started crying, and she fell at his feet crying, and he patted her on the head like a father. And he looked at her and said, Sankirtan solves all problems. So I told her, I'm glad I'm coming in Parampara.
Jaya Prabhupada.
Jai Prasad Pore Sava.
Krishna Prasaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Chinamine.
Oh! Radha Krishna, Gurubina, Shamagunatakam, Gita Govadanti, Vrindavandam ki, Navitam ki, Gangamayi ki, Yamunamayi ki, Tulasi Devi ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Samavita Bhakta Vrinda ki, Gaur Vrindanati. All glories to Samadavati. All glories to Samadavati. All glories to Samadavati. All glories.